This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague, Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. And this is podcast 34. Yes, 34, ladies and gents. We've been here now, heading towards 2 years, and be 2 years next month that we started this podcast. So thank you ever so much for continuing to support us, and thanking you again for the feedback and for subscribing to our channels, which are all over the place now: Google Podcasts, iTunes, Audio Boom, SoundCloud. Oh, any others, Pete?
Spotify,
and there's some more to come, I believe.
Overcast, I think you might have mentioned. Anyway, hello everybody. I hope everyone's well.
Yeah. How are you, Pete? Anyway.
I'm all right, mate. I mean, it's just we're having some funny old fun and games with the markets, aren't we?
Yes, as I've said before, Pete, and we've said on here a few times, the volatility is going to continue because, you know, there's a certain level of uncertainty that's coming into the mix, and more so over the next, less than 2 weeks now. There's going to be more volatility that's going to happen from, you know, across America. And from what I'm reading, the voting might go on until the end of November, in a sense of the counting of the votes. And then we've got this uncertainty going on over here regarding Brexit and settlement of that, and what sort of conclusions we're going to have, and no deal, and it's just more of the same, mate. And on top of that, we've got COVID going around everywhere still.
Yeah, and all the lockdowns and restrictions, and that seems to be one-way traffic, doesn't it? There seems to be the trend towards more lockdown, not less. And, you know, that's obviously going to be crushing bits of the economy. Tomorrow, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 21st of October, and it's about 5:30 p.m. Tomorrow, we've got Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, doing an economic update to Parliament. So I think that's going to give a real show of what kind of state the government finances are in and what state the GDP is and stuff like that. It won't be pretty.
It won't be pretty, mate. And I think part of my concern is exactly that, you know, because the levels of debt is just gone up. The overspend on everything has gone up. We've got situations where lots of people are saying they want businesses supported, they want people that are furloughed to be supported, and we're almost caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, do you support employment / the GDP / revenue / tax intake, or do you actually fight and try and deal with this COVID situation? And they're in a rock and a hard place, and I don't think it helps that they've done so many U-turns already on so many different aspects that, you know, people are losing faith, and the loss of the goodwill that we spoke about before, that the Conservative part government had, that's dwindling and declining rapidly at the moment.
I think there must be loads of voters up north who voted for the Tories, and that apparently has been a trend that's been sort of coming for many years, where the Tory support has been growing in the north and the Labour support has been declining. But I can't help thinking that Boris is going to squander all that in one foul swoop, because he must have upset so many people up north of late. You've got to have. I'd be astonished if it's not any different to that.
Yeah, I think unfortunately that is the situation. It almost reminds me a little bit about when the Lib Dems turned their backs on the students. Remember?
Yeah, good point.
The students had got them into sharing a little bit of power with the Conservative government, and then they basically turned around and said, and just left all the students hanging. And you know what happened to that after that? You know, they just went into massive decline, didn't they?
I mean, exactly.
The thing is, you know, the Conservative government have basically got power without any sort of, you know, concerns for the next, 3 years or more, Pete? So there's no vote on government. Whether or not that means that Boris keeps his job for 3 years is another matter. But yeah, it's a lot of uncertainty, and that's going to increase volatility. And we've seen this regarding the markets ebbing and flowing between 5,800 on the FTSE, back up to 6+, and back down again. And that's going to continue. And there's some hot spots and some nice stocks that are moving in between all that across the whole of the All Share and on AIM. But you have to be very, very selective. And you have to also be choosing stocks which have got resilience, which don't actually follow the market trend, whether they're going up or coming down rapidly. They tend to be able to trade in their own little lane and be resilient. And that's what you need to be looking for, really.
Yeah, that's interesting, because something I've noticed, and I mean, maybe I'm overplaying this, but I sort of sense it's happened in the last couple of weeks, where a lot of the, what I would call COVID stocks, and one of those I would include is AstraZeneca, which both of us hold, whereas they were doing very well some time ago, you know, in the last sort of like market sell-off, it was almost like I could look across my portfolio and there'd be loads of red, but AstraZeneca would be up and Tristel, TSTL, would be up. But what I'm noticing lately is that even those ones are getting sold off on bad days. And that seems to be a bit of a change. I mean, they did have a good run. Maybe there's a lot of people sat on profit who are now thinking, oh, you know, I'm a bit nervous. I'll bank the profits I made on that. But that's a change that I've noticed.
I think part of that, Pete, is because those sort of lower volatility, lower beta stocks, and beta being a measure of volatility. Sorry, folks. It's just that what's happened with those particular stocks is that they've been so hot and so resilient for a little while.
Yeah.
That people have seen other stocks within that sort of sector doing better, and they've moved. Some people have moved from having those blue chip stocks into having the stocks that are actually moving, the momentum stocks that are moving within the pharma sector, and so on and so forth. So they've moved away from that, and I think that's because they've seen other people allegedly having superior results to them. I'm not sure why the institutions would sell out of the likes of AstraZeneca. But equally, you're hearing, I think it was Valence say the other day, that, you know, if and when we do get a vaccine, it's not going to be the magic bullet, in a sense of we will still need to have these things around. The coronavirus is still going to be around. COVID's still going to be around. It's not going to cure it. You know what I mean? So there's that as well, Pete. And the fact that the likelihood is we're not going to get it this year. You remember in the summer, it was like, oh, we might have it by October, November of, you know, 2020. You know, now it's looking likely if we do get one, it might be the summer of 2021. It may not even be that, Pete. Yeah?
Well, it's funny you should bring this up, because it was something I wanted to mention. I think I'm sort of a bit frustrated with the government, because what they're doing is they're continually sort of dangling these sunny, golden, you know, sunny uplands ahead. And then, as time goes on, we learn the reality. So, you know, a while ago, the vaccine was the cure all, and you know, life could get back to normal once a vaccine came along, and there might be a vaccine for Christmas and all this kind of stuff. And then as time goes on, you start to learn more about it. And as you said, I mean, Jonathan Van Tam, who, you know, one of the government scientists, he was saying that it won't be until the spring we get a vaccine, so it's dropping back. And, you know, I'm very dubious it'll even be then. But the thing that's also come out is that any vaccine that we get isn't going to prevent you getting C19. Yep. You're still going to get it, but it's just the symptoms will be a lot milder. Well, that's probably no good if you're a vulnerable person. So, and then the other thing is that they reckon it won't just be one vaccine. You'll need a cocktail of vaccines that you take to give you some sort of protection. And then the other thing is they were saying that there's this concept of first generation vaccines, which will be these ones that are coming out sort of in a rush. And then there will be second generation vaccines, and they should be better. But again, they won't prevent it. They'll just, you know, soften the blow, if you like. So the idea that this is the cure of everything and you know, we're going to eradicate C19. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, we've only dealt with one of these sort of massive infections before, and that was the smallpox one, Pete. So I think, unfortunately, what's going to happen, and I think Valence touched on this as well, is that it, you know, it will end up potentially being the case of you almost need to have this vaccine and all this on an annual basis, almost like a flu jab going forward.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different scenarios to it, and I'm sure people will contest what Valence has said at some point going forward as well. But I think that's part of the reason why you see AstraZeneca, Glaxo welcomed GSK, down at 52-week lows in the case of Glaxo's not far off that sort of base. I think it went sub £14 this week and today. So the stocks there that you know or have said in the past that we're going to pay our dividends. So a lot of people are now looking across at GSK and seeing good value there if they want to hold a blue chip that's going to be paying a dividend. I'm just having a quick look here. So it's at 13.53 today. It's closed down, Pete. And that's a new one-year low, that particular stock. It's actually lower, Pete, than it was when we had the market sell-off in March, April time.
See, that's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and, for a blue chipper.
And that's due to pay 80 pence of dividends, so it must be pushing 6% or so, you know, which is a juicy yield, and I think there's a good likelihood that can be maintained. I don't think we'll see the 80 pence increased for many years, but I think they'll be able to maintain it from what I'm picking up.
Well, the thing is with that particular stock, Pete, as with a lot of the blue chip sort of pharma stocks, is that, you know, I think, and I said this to you before when I was talking about AstraZeneca, Pete, there's pretty much emphasis being put on this vaccine. You know, these companies were doing really, really well and continue to do well, irrespective of finding the magic bullet for this vaccine. Yeah, they're involved in lots and lots of other drugs and pharmacology, and they're doing and selling this around the world. You know, so my question is, why is GSK at 13.53? You know, it's the 5-year low is just sub £13, Pete. Yeah, that's a 5-year low. What's GSK doing at this level? So people are starting to add a little bit and buy a little bit of GSK. Is the bottom in right now? I don't know. I don't think it is, because the market's just continuing to sell it off regardless. So
yeah, that's the trouble, isn't it? It's like, if the market stays in this grumpy mood, then we could see Glaxo pulled down
even further, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is a contagion thing where people don't sell Glaxo because they don't want Glaxo. They sell it because they have to sell Glaxo because they've got margin calls on other positions or something. You know, I think there's a lot of that going on.
I think that's part of it. I think that I wouldn't like to think people are playing around with GSK and getting called on margins on it, Pete.
I'm thinking of more speculative
stocks, but you never know. There probably is some people trading that stock and getting margined on it. You know what I mean?
Oh, mate, there will be. There's almost no doubt about that. But it's problems with other stocks. So say, for instance, they've taken
out. You meant margin calls on other stocks and having to sell the stocks. Sorry, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the concept of contagion that I think we see quite a lot. The other thing to bear in mind is that quite often when you see something like Glaxo fall, you think, oh, everyone's selling Glaxo. Well, of course, in reality, everyone isn't selling Glaxo. It's at the margin. There's still loads of people buying Glaxo every day, but it's just fractionally more selling pressure, and that's why the price goes down.
Agreed, mate. I mean, Pete, I touched on beta earlier. I just wanted to explain to people that,
yeah,
you know, when you're looking at your, what you need to do is look at your portfolio and look at what's in your holdings. And it's essentially what you're trying to do is to keep the volatility as lower, it's lower than the market if at all possible. And if you've got far too many, let's use this rhetoric really again, far too many AIM stocks in your portfolio, then the beta is going to not correlate to the FTSE 100, the FTSE All share, because you're looking for, you've got a higher risk portfolio, right? Because you're looking for a higher return, right? So in the highest tier of investments regarding stocks on the London Exchange, you're looking at high risk, really small cap stocks that are on AIM, and that's the highest part of your, if you look at a pyramid. Yeah, and those are going to have the highest beta. So when the markets are going down, yeah, if the market goes down 1%, your portfolio, if it's heavily involved in AIM stocks or really small cap stocks, could go down 2%.
Yeah,
because it doesn't correlate to the beta of the FTSE or even the AIM exchange. Yeah, it'll go up almost double. Well,
can I just say that's how it works? So if a stock has a beta of 1, that means it moves with the market. So if it has a beta of 2, it moves twice the move average of the market. Beta 3 times. If it's a negative beta, then it moves inverse to the market. So I mean, obviously, I've got a short position on the FTSE 100. Yeah, that obviously is a negative 1 beta because it moves exactly opposite what the FTSE 100 moves. So it gains me money when the FTSE 100 falls.
Indeed. So the point I'm trying to make is sometimes people are saying, why is my portfolio going down more than the market has? Have a look within your portfolio and assess, or have a look on the platforms that you use. And I'm sure that ShareScope has got beta analysis on the platforms as well. You'd be able to see what the beta is for every single individual stock or even fund that you hold in your portfolio. And if you're thinking, you know what, the markets are getting too volatile for my portfolio, it might mean that you need to reduce your exposure to the higher risk, higher return stocks that are in your portfolio, because when the markets are declining, they will go down faster. Yeah. And equally, if there's bad news, as we've seen on some of the stocks this week and last week and the month before, they will go down excessively because there were high expectations regarding that stock, and the bad news has come in and now it's fallen 5, 10, 20%, you know, because of that bad news.
It's important to realize as well that beta isn't just small cap stocks, although with small cap stocks it's also, so for instance, in the FTSE 100 you'll find the miners have got high beta, and it tends to be the cyclical thing. So things like airlines and that will have a high beta. The other thing to bear in mind is that beta isn't a fixed value over time. But as Peter says, if you look on SharePad or whatever tool you use, you can see the beta. But that beta isn't like a solid fact. Those betas can change over time, and they can change, you know, they vary a bit, but they give you a good guide.
Agreed. Now, Pete, did you want to start on some of the questions that we've had holding pending?
Yeah, we've got a question from weeks ago that we really need to deal with.
That's why I'm saying get it in early rather than just forgetting about it, mate.
That's we'll forget it. I've got it on my little notes bit of paper, and I put loads of like scribbled stars around it. We really mustn't forget it. A nice chap called Scott Parker, who follows us on Twitter and obviously listens to the podcast, says, ask the question, how do we find stock ideas in the first place?
Right. Do you want me to start with that, Pete?
Well, yeah, I'm intrigued to hear your answer to this, actually.
Oh, okay.
I know my own answer, obviously. Right. I hope you know yours.
Yeah, I've got a slightly different approach to most people in a sense of, and I think I've partially answered this before, I tend to look at what's going on away from the UK market. So my research tends to start overseas, or I see an article written about certain idea or niche or a technology-based idea that's really taking off somewhere. And a good while ago, probably 10 years ago maybe, I think one of the trends that were being talked about was the Internet of Things. When that started to bubble up, I was like, oh, what is the Internet of Things? So I was looking at all these different things and what conceptualized the Internet of Things. And eventually led me to invest, having done lots and lots of research around this company. I always tend, and this is where I'm poor, people, so I do apologize, in a sense of my external sort of reach. I tend to always gravitate back to a UK stock that does what I'm looking for, because I've got a very busy life. I've got a very busy family stuff, do a lot of stuff in the community. So I haven't got the time or the energy or the inclination to be researching and then analysing UK stocks at 7 a.m. and then running through till 9 p.m. researching and looking at US stocks and what they're doing on the US markets up until 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. So I tend to gravitate back to UK listed stocks and entities. So on the Internet of Things, one of the stocks that I found back then was Telit. Remember Telit, Pete, which went...
Mate, remember, I hold it, TCM, yeah.
TCM. So I got involved in that stock quite early, and it did really, really and exceptionally well for me. But that was because I started looking at what the Internet of Things meant. And also back then, and I'll give another shout out again to Steve Fraser, because Steve Fraser was the person that I got involved with finding and looking at all the different things he was writing about regarding technology stocks.
It's Shares Magazine, isn't it?
Shares Magazine. So
yeah,
that tends to lead me to looking at tech stocks a lot, and biopharma and biotech and all these other tech related sort of entities. So I tend to look at what's going on overseas, what's doing really, really well overseas, and is there a stock over here that does that or on a similar sort of vein? Because why? Because the large US companies tend to look over here eventually and think, okay, that company's doing that really, really well. We tend to have a UK discount, so the US companies tend to come over here and purchase these as bolt-on companies, and some of them that allow to grow on their own, yeah, eventually do exceptionally well when the market cottons on. So I tend to look overseas, do my research to see if any companies are over here that do that, and I'm quite happy to buy that company early, you know, before anyone else is talking about it. And more often than not, I prefer if no one's talking about it. So I'll invest and just sit and watch, and then wait for the further news and see if the growth of that tech materializes to the point that the company's making revenue, and hopefully they get to a point where they're generating a profit. So we've got other companies over here that are doing really well, like Blue Prism. It's £1 billion, or was £1 billion market cap company last time I looked. But it's still loss making. So that's one I held for a little while, made some significant money on it, and sold it. But that's what I tend to do. I tend to not be looking at who's tipped this stock, who's got how many followers on Twitter, and therefore because they bought that stock, I'm buying it too. I don't do that. I refuse to do that. Yeah. And I would ask you guys and ladies to do the same, because you don't know what their research is. You don't know what level of investment they've made in that stock. And invariably, most of the time, you don't know when they've sold out of that stock, because there's a load of noise around person buying the stock, but very, very quietly, you don't hear about the stock again. You don't know when they've sold it, or if they've sold it, or if they still hold it. So
this is why you don't know anything about their returns over time.
They don't know about their returns, exactly.
Yeah, they only tell you about their winners. They don't know about their losers.
Which is why I always say, and people hate me repeating it, just do your own research. You know, find your own stocks. And it is difficult, you know. But Pete and I have been doing this now, you know, combined 50 years plus, right? And it wasn't easy for us either. And we still haven't mastered it.
Oh, it never is. Even now, it's not easy.
We still haven't mastered it. We're still not the best investors in the world. We're never going to be, but it won't stop us doing our own research to try and get better. And that's all I'm asking all of you guys and ladies to do.
On PRSM, I was flicking through Investors Chronicle the other day, and I noticed that it's got a lot of short interest on it. So that's something people need to be aware of. You know, short sellers are heavily into PRSM.
And that is invariably, Pete, because it is a loss-making company. It's got a huge market cap, and it's still loss making, so that attracts people to go, well, it can't be worth that much, you know, it shouldn't be worth that much. And often than not, they're right. But it's a company that's at some point it's going to do exceptionally well, and also its peer, I forget what its peer is called now in the US, is worth significantly more than it, and doesn't do that much better revenue wise either, you know.
While we're on the subject with PRSM, and we'll come back to the ideas thing in a bit, a stock I wanted to mention, which I've mentioned on the podcast before, I don't hold it, but it's a stock I like a lot, and I'm sort of kicking myself that I don't hold it. Netcall, NET. That's interesting, because just the other day, they bought a robotic process automation company, PRA, which is exactly what Prism does. And I thought that was a very interesting little add-on that Net have done.
Well, that will prove, I mean, if you're looking for, this is a little bit about how do I find stocks, I'm looking at the hashtags on Twitter. Yeah, so for Prism, one of the hashtags to search regarding what they do is...
That's millions.
Is hashtag RPA, so you can look at that sort of automation and robotics, So it's going back a little while now when I last held that stock. So yeah, so that's the thing to do, to look at these acquisitions, because as I've said before, a lot of stuff is about future tech. So I'm looking at what's going to grow. I'm not looking at cyclical manufacturing / engineering companies, right? Why? Because some of those are simply not going to make it into the next 5, 10, 15 years. Some of them are going to be around forever, right? Some of them simply will not make it because of the fixed costs and the increasing costs of manufacturing. Yeah?
And of course, they're not, yeah, a lot of them are ex-growth.
Yeah, a lot of them are ex-growth, like, but you've touched on it already, Pete. There's other companies out there across the world now utilizing automation, robotics, machine learning, RPA, etc., that are going to manufacture that same widget or whatever it is that they're making far quicker and far cheaper. Yeah?
Yeah, it's going to give them the edge, isn't it?
It's going to give these other companies the edge. So I'm looking for that pseudo engineering manufacturing company that's laden with tech, that are doing what they're doing far cheaper, far quicker, far more efficiently than that old manufacturing company that's sitting on the FTSE or even on the AIM market that looks cheap. It might be cheap for a reason.
Oh yeah, exactly. On that net one, while I think of it, so just to explain, robotic process automation in this sense is where they take like processes like, you know, filling out a form and placing an order and all this kind of, you know, manual sort of admin jobs, and they basically automate those tasks. It's like a robot does those tasks rather than you needing a person to do them. And it's interesting with Netcall because they've also got a thing called low code, which is a sort of concept where people in call centers using Netcall software can sort of like drag and drop what they call entities. It's all a bit IT and techy and I don't fully understand it, but they can sort of like create their own programs in a way without being programmers. So it's quite clever stuff. And so low code and RPA go together and really enhance what Netcall are able to offer. So I think that's some really interesting things going on with that company.
The beauty of all of this, Pete, and a lot of companies are trying to do it and will be doing it, and Netcall obviously are trying to push on with that, is this idea behind digital transformation. Right. So if you're using Twitter, you hashtag digital transformation, you look at all the different opportunities that are going on there. And what they're trying to do is to help businesses improve efficiencies, to reduce their back offices. Yeah. And to cut unnecessary costs. Yeah. Because we've seen everything else is going up. We've seen people having to leave buildings and people working from home. Everything is moving towards reducing costs. So you're going to have less people in offices. Okay. Right. Okay, how do I manufacture something if I haven't got people in the office, if I haven't got people in the factory, if I haven't got people on site? You know what? Efficiencies. I'm going to get in some robotics. I'm going to add another layer of automation into the factory. Yeah? People can't social distance and make this product, so I'm going to have to get in some robotics. More and more companies are going to have to do that. So what am I doing? Yeah. To apply that, I'm looking at all the different companies across the FTSE, the London Stock Exchange, and I'm looking at all the companies that may be able to help me find a company that's involved in digital transformation of some sort. So that enables me to whittle it down to about 5 to 10 companies across from the largest FTSE company all the way down to the tiniest AIM company. And I'm looking for that tech company that can enable me to find a company involved in RPA, digital transformation, AI, machine learning, blah, 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 blah. And when I found that company, I'm on it. And I'm hoping that I can't see any noise on Twitter. I can't see loads of people talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the less people see talking about it, the happier I am.
But obviously, you still want it to be a sensible business. You don't want it based in Russia or anything like that. You know what I mean? Oh, we get whacked. We're going to get whacked again, mate.
Don't keep saying the R word, Pete, please. I don't want to be investing in certain countries, and I don't want to have a situation where I don't know what's happening on the ground. Yeah, and we talked about AAZ, I think it was the last podcast, Pete, didn't we? And, you know, you've got essentially a ceasefire. No, you haven't got a ceasefire. Oh, there's bombings here, there's bombings. You know, that stock has been up and down like a yo-yo. The poor shareholders that are there in that stock now are wandering around with neck braces. They literally are, because they haven't got a Scooby-Doo from 1 minute to the next how much that stock's going to rise 10-15%, only to fall back 10-15%. And the only thing that's going to stop
that's
that
volatility... Anglo-Asian mining, isn't it?
Anglo-Asian mining. The only thing that's going to stop that volatility is when there's a period of peace regarding those boundaries and borders and the different people that are fighting over there right now. So I would prefer to have a stock or a company that's listed on the London Stock Exchange, is HQ'd in the UK, preferably. And I can actually see the news and trust, trust the news as to what's going on and the reporting that's going on regarding that company. And you know what? If I know someone that's in the industry, I can pick the phone up and actually speak to them and say, you know what, John, blah, 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 this company, what are you hearing on the grapevine regarding this company? And John can tell me. I can't do that with a company that's based in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, no, that sounds really useful. I guess you're also looking for clear signs that, I mean, obviously a lot of these newer stage companies are going to be loss-making and stuff, which is sort of fair enough at that stage. But I suppose you're looking for revenues increasing and you're looking for, you know, just sensible developments within the company where they're developing the right products and you can see the sort of strategic plan and the CEO seems a sensible chap and all those kind of things.
Yeah, all my research usually starts once I've decided this is the area I want to have a look at and I found some companies. It then starts as the CEO of the board. I want to look at the quality of who they are, what they've done in the past, how they've behaved when they've been in charge of companies in the past as well. The other element of it really is if they are loss making, I want to see what valuations are put on their peers that are overseas. So if I've started in the US, I then go back and look at what valuations these companies have got in the US in comparison to their revenues, if they've got any. If they've got revenues, I look at the revenues in comparison to what their market cap is, and I look at what the revenues are in comparison to what the UK one is, and I'm thinking, crikey, why is the UK one a third of the price of the US one? It's usually the case. You know, and then look at what stage they are. Have they been doing this for 3, 4, 5 years? And the US ones have been doing it 3, 4, 5 years. If that's equal parity and they've got equal sort of quality of management and the tech or whatever they're doing is equal or the UK one's better, I'm happy to choose the UK listed one over the US every single time. And that's what you've got to be looking at. You've got to be able to spend a bit of time to find something which, you know, if you are correct... we spoke about the herd last week, last podcast. Yeah. When the herd arrives, or the analysts, or the city pundits, or whatever arrive, and they're now championing your stock, you're not trying to buy that on that day that everyone else is tipping it. You're already in that stock, but it may be up one-fold, two-fold, three-fold, whatever. And at that stage, you're able to say, okay, when the really good news happens, the momentum's going to come there again. And you're ahead of the curve, but it's very, very high risk because these things sometimes do not pan out, you know. So you've got to be comfortable with the level of risk, and that's where, you know, Pete and I have spoken about before. Position sizing is very, very important. Don't over leverage. Don't overexpose yourself to a stock that's very, very high risk, and don't have it so that if the markets fall 2%, your stock's down 4, 5, 6%. And you're thinking, oh crikey, I can't handle that sort of loss, you know, because when a stock goes wrong. You know, and it goes wrong for a long period, you could easily see that stock fall 10%, 30%, 40%, 50%. And then you're waiting.
Oh, very quickly, very quickly.
Yeah, you're waiting forever for it to return back to a decent level. And it may never return to that level. So you have to also learn to take a loss. And this is what I was talking about in the last podcast. When a stock's doing well, take it with good grace. When a stock's not going so well, take it with good grace. And decide whether or not you can take any more of a loss or have a loss in mind before you've even start. And if it goes down 10%, leave. You can always come back and revisit the stock.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you say, it's that idea of having a stop loss level, 10, 20, 30%, whatever you want it to be, where you sort of say, well, if it hits that, I'm getting out. And then, as you say, you can always revisit it. And I think, I mean, I'm not a huge lover of stop losses myself, except for certain circumstances. And I think if you're buying very high risk speculative stocks, then I think stop losses could be a lot of sense. Yeah. If you're buying something like Glaxo, then I just don't see the point, really.
Agreed. So what is your style, Pete? How do you find your stocks?
Well, do you know, it's funny. I'm a real sort of like butterfly, because I look all over the place for the ideas, really. You know, I'm literally a sponge for ideas. So, I mean, just my normal day-to-day way of doing things. So, like, I wake up at whatever time in the morning. Some people would say very late.
It is late.
It's way late compared to everyone else. I start reading through the RNS statements, and I've got a pretty good knowledge of the kind of companies I'm interested in. So I'm not wasting time looking at the junky little miners and things. I'm just not interested. It's not my game. So I can, you know, just ignore those RNSs, and I just go slowly through the RNSs, and, you know, I'll read ones that are interesting. So like that Netcall one, NET, where, you know, I saw, oh, Netcall have done a takeover. What's that then? You know, so I go in and have a look, and because I understand Netcall pretty well, and I even used to own it some years ago, it's like I can understand the significance of what they've done. And I think, oh, that's nice, you know. So I sort of take a note of that and put it in my little book for later, you know. So every morning when I'm reading through the RNSs, I'm getting a good picture of what's happening on various stocks. So that's one of my sources. And then later in the day, I nearly always, around lunchtime or something, spend, I don't know, an hour or something reading Investors Chronicle. And I get a lot of ideas out of there. You know, and it can be ideas for individual stocks, but it can also be ideas for themes. So what you were talking about before is really a sort of thematic investing, isn't it?
Indeed.
So like, you know, you gave an example on a podcast recently of Loop Up.
Yes.
Where you said, you know, you could tell that Zoom was doing well over in America. So the obvious theme was that something like Loop could do well as well, but it's based over here. So that's a great idea. And there are so many good themes around, and it makes sense to be in a good theme because it's like a tailwind. So like, for instance, cybersecurity is a pretty good one, because obviously there's more and more stuff going digital and IT, and we're all staying at home and all the rest of it. And there's more and more need for cybersecurity. So, yeah, that's a great one. As you said, Internet of Things, IoT. That has got so much future potential. You know, it's just millions of, I mean, AI, you know, artificial intelligence, that's mega. Data crunching, that's one I particularly are sort of like interested in at the moment, or I don't really have much exposure to it, but it's certainly a theme I'm considering. So the idea that, you know, there's so many companies that are just crunching data and getting information out of data for marketing purposes and whatever, which is something that Bango, BGO, which I hold, Bango is doing that to an extent with their the information they generate from the purchases on their platform and stuff. You know, they create data out of that and information out there, which they can then sell. So that's all just fantastic. You know, that whole data thing is massive.
Yeah,
and, I mean, you know, it should be so big.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, Pete, about doing enough research and seeing the themes and joining the dots together, which one of my friends loves to quote. And on that note, something I saw today that was really interesting. We've been talking about who are the winners of COVID. We've talked about that quite regularly, haven't we? Yeah.
And
some of the stocks that you wouldn't expect. We've talked about AO World, because lots of people are buying white goods because they're working from home, and, you know, having little juice boxes and all the rest of it, and making their own, blending their own stuff, and, you know, all the rest of it. Really interesting today, I thought, oh, finally, because one of the winners of this COVID stuff has been the logistics companies, or some logistics companies, right? Because of all of this online e-commerce, retail, people are having to buy things online and then having it delivered at home. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one stock that's often got pillared, people absolutely hammered, and, you know, rejected, and every year they're on strike and blah 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 blah. Yeah.
Oh no.
So we're talking about Royal Mail, folks, right? Royal Mail, right? So
RMG
at its peak, right? It was £6 a share in April of 2018. Okay. At its base, this March, it was £1.24. Ouch. Okay. So
I hold it, mate, so I'm feeling the pain.
Sorry, I keep finding stocks that you hold, Pete. I do apologise.
But
today, right, it's up at £2.46, so it's doubled from its lows. From its lows, right? And why is that, right? Because of the logistics, of the e-commerce, everything has to be delivered. They're one of the winners of this COVID shenanigans, okay? People are having to have stuff delivered to their doors and post offices there doing that. Yeah, you're not able to take a present to see somebody, you're sticking it in the Royal Mail box and you're weighing it and paying additional cost to get it delivered. Today, the Royal Mail put something out, which I think is an absolute, could be, I won't use the word game changer, script, you know, I think it will enhance their revenue. So this is something that people need to look out for. You don't have to do what I do and go and look overseas. The news, as Pete says, is there right in front of your face, in the front of your nose. Royal Mail will today start collecting parcels from doorsteps for the first time. You're able to parcel up your stuff. This is brilliant ahead of Christmas, Pete, yeah? Mm-hmm. Parcel up your stuff for a fee of 72 pence on top of standard postage. The postal worker will collect up to 5 items per customer per day, between Monday and Saturday. Parcels can weigh up to 20 kilos and can be a little over twice the size of most airplane hand luggage. Okay, so you pay that fee, they take it away, and then they sort it out from there on with a charge regarding the postage of the box. That's going to... If that doesn't help their revenues and stabilise them, I don't know what. And this year, and I don't like to crystal ball anything, given how busy they are and the additional overtime they're going to be having dealing with all this additional work, I don't think we're going to be hearing much about a strike. Don't hold me to it, folks, but it might be the first year in a while we don't hear about Royal Mail potentially, you know, not happy about what their salaries are and we're going on strike. We'll see. But I think that's a really good initiative for them to do doorstep collections.
Yeah, and they've been trying it in Bristol, and apparently it has worked well. So that's, you know, that's potentially a good sign. I think on the strike side of things, and I think because of the C-19 fiasco, you know, there's going to be so many people wanting jobs and so many people worried about their own jobs. I think that in itself will help tone down the sort of striking aspect, if you like.
Well, one can only hope, Pete. One can only hope because, you know, the level.
Well, as a shareholder, I can only hope, yeah. one thing that's happened at RMG as well, which caused the sort of big jump up from the lows, was that guy, is it Serge Krasnwinski or something? I think I've just insulted him massively. Sorry, mate.
I don't know. Not a company I track, mate. Go on.
You know, I got a feeling he's something to do with PayPoint. I got a feeling he's something to do with... Who's that one that does all the passport? Photo ID. PHTM, Photo Me International.
Photo Me, yeah.
I think he's linked to them. He might be the CEO or the chairman or something. Anyway, whoever it is, this bloke called Serge has been buying chunks of RMG, and there was rumours that he might be thinking of a takeover or something. So I don't know what's going on.
Are you sure you're not talking about Serge from Kasabian, Pete?
That was it, Serge Kasabian. Didn't I say that?
No, I'm talking about the group, the musical group, Kasabian, mate.
Oh,
anyway, move on, mate. Move on. Crack on.
Hey, mate, I need to tell you about something because I dangled it in front of you. Should I say that? I dangled it in front of you before the podcast started. Mate, this is getting really dodgy. Right.
It's getting risque, Pete. Don't dangle.
Oh, it's getting well dodgy. I want to tell you about Badwill.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Right. So, I've never come across this before, and it's something I read in Investors Chronicle the other day while I was reading through some stuff. And you have this concept in accounting of goodwill. Now, goodwill is when, say, a company buys another company, yeah? Let's say the company being bought has assets, tangible assets, and other assets that can be valued. Let's say they add up to £10 million, yeah? Now, if the company buying them tries to buy it and they want to pay £10 million, and the owners of the company being acquired say, no way, you ain't getting it for 10 million, you got to pay 15. Yeah? So what happens is the acquirer pays 15 million, but they've now paid too much money for those assets because they paid 15 million for 10 million company, 10 million of assets, yeah? But what they do is the extra 5 million becomes a thing called goodwill. And goodwill is basically, you know, the concept of like the future earning power of patents and of product designs and of, you know, the brand power, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what's called goodwill, yeah? And obviously there's a big problem if a company has too much goodwill. You know, if the company was has got assets, you know, factories and stuff worth 10 million, and they've paid 100 million for it, then 90 million of goodwill may be too much. That may be a bit ridiculous. So quite often you find in that circumstance, you get write-downs in future years where they say, you know, that acquisition we did 10 years ago is actually really ridiculous, and we're now writing down the value of goodwill. Anyway, right, badwill is sort of like the opposite of that, and it comes up where it's not allowed in the UK, yeah, but the ECB, European Central Bank, has recently done a ruling where they will allow, I've got to try and explain this as best I can, I probably won't be perfect, but basically the ECB will allow a bank to buy another bank at what is in effect a discount to the net asset value. So say the net asset value is 200 million euros, but they can actually buy the bank for 125 million euros. They can bank 75 million as a positive thing called badwill. That's weird, isn't it?
Okay.
But just, if you ever see that term, that's basically what it is.
It's not a term I've seen, Pete, before.
Well, I haven't
seen goodwill, I haven't seen badwill, so yeah, interesting.
Yeah. I think it's very rare that this would come up, and it's like I say, they won't allow it in the UK at the moment.
Right. Okay.
But that's because when you think, we talked about Virgin Bank the other day, VMUK, and we were saying on there that I can't remember the numbers now, but it was something like the market cap was something like 30% of the asset value. So in that circumstance, if another bank could buy that for more than the market cap, it could still get a big reduction on the actual asset value, and that in Europe could go down as badwill.
Interesting, Peter. Well, you've educated me today, mate. Thank you for that.
Might even have educated myself somewhere along the line. Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
Right, what are we on next then, mate? I've got some stocks to talk about. What else have you got?
You go for it, mate. You go for it.
Oh, let me just throw in some weird ones. Right. One I read the other day was Loungers. LGRS. Yeah?
Okay.
Now, what surprised me about this one was that its results actually looked really good. I was like, what? I was really quite surprised. And what they do, it's like a load of bars, yeah, and sort of restaurants or whatever. But they're sort of different because they have alcohol and things, but they have like a big emphasis on coffees and a cafe culture. And there's also this idea of lots of sofas and things, and it's very comfortable and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm not saying this is something that I would buy, and to be quite honestly, I probably wouldn't. But what I thought was interesting, the fact that they're actually doing rather well, but obviously they're going to be really at risk if the C-19 lockdowns and stuff just drag on and on and on, all the rest of it, they're going to be coming under pressure, I think. So, you know, full marks to them for doing well when they could. I'm not convinced it can last.
Well, if this is the problem with anything that's related to the hospitality industry, isn't it, really? That they've had that little window between, what was it, May through to September, when they had additional assistance and they were opening outside and doing all what they're doing. And essentially, by the looks of it, Pete, you know, you've got England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, you know, at some point with various different tiers of lockdown, people aren't going to be going out in the numbers that they'll be going out. All those, you know, Christmas meals that people were going to be having together, business or family wise, isn't going to happen, Pete. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And all these social parties that people normally have at Christmas when they're celebrating the year coming to an end, isn't going to happen. So unless they've got some other way of generating some revenue, then, you know, the latter part of this year, whatever they've done so far this year is going to be, you know, in decline or impacted the latter part of this year. So it'd be one to definitely be keeping an eye on. But would I invest in it in the sense of what their next half year results might be? I probably wouldn't at this stage, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's totally my feeling on it. But I thought it was an interesting one to bring up because to be fair, they did surprise me. I really didn't expect the results to be as good as they were. I was really quite shocked. Okay. Another one, just to throw in quick, I've never seen this company before this week. It listed on the market few months ago. I think it might have listed before Christmas, so it's a recent IPO. It's ELIX. I think it's called Elixir, but I might even be wrong on that. But basically, it's like an IT consultancy, yeah? But they had a trading update the other day, and it was good, you know? And from what I can tell, they're on a sort of historic multiple of EBITDA, a forward multiple of EBITDA of about 10 times. So maybe there's value there. It could be an interesting one. It certainly jumped up the other day, but it could be one for people to have a look at. I don't hold it. I didn't even know what it was.
I've quickly grabbed that trading update, which came out 2 days ago. Where are we now? So on Monday. And it's saying an established global award-winning challenger consultancy company. Trading continued to be strong, with the group recording another record revenue month in September following previous record revenue months in June and July of 2020. As a result, adjusted EBITDA for the year ending 31st of December 2020 is now expected to be in excess of 9.25 million on an IFRS 16 basis. EBITDA expected to be in excess of it. Yeah, so it's looking all right. And
have you got the market cap there?
I'm going to grab that in a sec. As at the 16th of, the 30th of September, it's at 16.8 million pounds cash. So let me just find that ticker and then find
that. That's nice as well, isn't it?
Well, I would hope if they just IPO, they've still got a bit of cash left, Pete. You know what I mean? Let's have a look here. Market cap. 115 market cap, Pete.
115. So, yeah.
115 million on AIM, and it's got £16.8 million in cash. And we spoke the other day about these consultants and ITs and all the rest of it getting paid a fortune regarding Brexit, and also the ones that are getting, you know, consulted via the government on this COVID stance. It'd be interesting to delve deeper and find out if they're involved in any of that, because if they
I'd imagine it's
they're milking it, mate.
If
they are in that space, we're milking it. Pete, have you ever looked at a company, and this is one I found interesting because I know you like to hedge things,
yeah,
and one of the companies that does that quite well but regarding currency is a company that you don't really you don't really hear them being spoken about that often. It's called Record PLC.
REC.
REC is a ticker symbol.
It's based in Windsor, believe it or not.
Ah, well, you probably know more about it than I do, because I just saw their results coming out the other day, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So they're engaged in the provision of currency management services for corporates mainly.
Yeah.
And it's a currency hedging mandates is primarily what they're looking at to reduce risk of all kinds of nature. So they've got different, let's just call them for sake, funds that do different strategies regarding the markets. Yeah. And obviously, depending how well those strategies do, they make more profits regarding that and make their clients, you know, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. So they came out with some quite good news the other day, and that they've been doing okay, Pete. I mean, over the past year, 12 months, they're up 14%. So that's not too bad for a company that's off the radar, and they're growing assets under management as well, which is always a good sign regarding almost an asset management company. If they can grow assets, it means that other people are willing to invest their money with them. So that they seem to be doing okay.
REC is one that I've looked at a lot in the past, and I know that some very sensible people like Maynard Payton and Richard Bedard and that have been in it or are in it or whatever. The only thing that's sort of disappointing with me with it, about a year or two ago, it seemed to have a sort of period where it wasn't doing very well. What I mean by that is the funds it was running and the strategies it was running weren't doing very well. And obviously if the strategies don't do well, then its customers leave it and you get a reduction in the assets under management. They take a percentage of the assets under management. So it sounds from what you're saying that maybe they've turned things around and are improving. So that's interesting. There's another company that's listed very recently. I think it's called Alpha FX or something. AFX, is it?
Okay.
Very similar. Very similar beast. And REC is interesting because it's a tiny company.
It's
got like 16 employees or something. I can see where you're coming from. I think, you know, there's probably a lot to like, although, you know, when I looked at it a couple of years ago, I did have reservations about it.
Yeah, 76 employees, creeping up, profitable, which is what you want, you know.
That's
an interesting one, especially with the volatility we're going to be having next year regarding COVID, who's president or not president. You know what I mean? So that's, I think that could be interesting. They're going to announce their half year results on the 24th of November. So if you're able to get your research done before then you might be worth a look.
Another one I noticed that had just broken out to new all time highs. But this was a few days ago, so it may have dropped back a bit. But it's related to what you said about RMG, and that is B-Box. Big box, you know, those big, we talked about it before, those big shed things.
Absolutely.
That has just broken out to a new all-time high, which tends to be a pretty bullish sign. And I think it's still got like 4% dividend or something. So I don't know if it is now, but that could be one to look at. I don't hold it.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect, Pete, that, you know, again, with the thematic sort of viewpoint, a lot of this, the warehousing / storage companies are going to do okay because, you know, we're going to be going back to looking, and what you guys and ladies should be doing really is that, who were the winners during March to September because of the COVID-related sort of issues? Yeah, have a look at those winners and then extrapolate that and add to that the fact that, okay, maybe people aren't going to go out and continue to buy bikes because now it's wet, it's damp, and it's ugly. So look at the winners that continue to be winners over the next 3 to 6 months when we're, you know, we're in further lockdown.
Yeah.
And people aren't, you know, buying the same sort of stuff that they're buying during the summer, but are still buying and using e-commerce. And some of those winners will still continue on. People, you know, for instance, people are still going to be going, people are still going to gamble. Right, so some of the gambling stocks should do okay over the next 3 to 6 months because people are sat at home twiddling their fingers, and bored hands tend to want to play something or do something. So the instrument company, what's it called, Gear for Music, Pete, might do well because people will buy another instrument this summer or gift an instrument to somebody, you know, and all those others. So have a look at what the winners could be for the next 3 to 6 months if you're a short term investor. But don't be buying stuff that didn't do well, you know, the last 6 months, expecting it now it's cheaper and will do next well in the next 6 months, because things are sadly going to get worse, I think, in the next 6 months.
Definitely. Another one that might have even had results today, I lose all track of time, I've got no idea what's going on, but it might have been yesterday. No, it was definitely today, is Eco Animal Health, EAH. And that's one that does like drugs and things for farm animals and things, yeah? So like pigs and sheep and, you know, moo cows and stuff like that. And anyway, EAH has been quite beaten up in, you know, recent months because of that Chinese swine flu epidemic where swine flu killed off loads of pig herds. So obviously if you don't have any pigs, you don't need to give them any drugs, do you? But anyway, that situation's been improving, and AH said today that they will, I think they said they will be ahead of expectations, but I might be wrong on that. But it was a very good update that I read today. And you can see on the chart, I mean, I think they jumped today. I think they're up 12%.
Let me interrupt you, mate. They're not up 12%, mate.
What are they now?
They closed up 21%, Pete.
Oh, sugar.
Yeah. You know, so the trading update must have been good. 21%, mate, yeah. Falling market.
Well, hopefully people saw my tweet today then.
Well, again, it's about B2P. It's about the fact that this is another stock that, if on good news, is going to absolutely shock. And it's done that. So it's saying strength in the Chinese and US markets. Boom, you've got a winner there already. Limited impact on COVID. Boom, you've got another one there already. You know what I mean? So everyone's jumping on that one there. You know, you've gone from having little or no volume in that stock over the past month or so. And then today it's gone up 21%. So everyone's looking for the next winner to be jumping in.
And it was very beaten up. So, you know, that was cool. Another company that one that you, I think you might still hold it, IXI. That had a good update the other day.
Yeah, I mean, Ixico is my go-to imaging play, neuroimaging play, for all of the research that needs to be involved in by the pharma and biotech companies. A lot of the FinTwit and investors on Twitter and so forth like another company called SDI, but Ixico is growing faster than that particular company. I think Ixico is still off the radar and could do much better. Going ahead,
is IXI more about data crunching, whereas SDI is more about looking at radiograms or something, is it? I'm not sure.
No.
It's about
Pete trying to analyze the data and do the research.
Yeah.
The imaging.
So it's SDI like that.
For rare diseases.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
Oh yeah. So is SDI like that? Because
it's more the other side in the sense of the kit, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you.
So they do all the imaging. But my preference is IXI. So if you're going to look at the two, other than look at what the companies do, over the past year, IXI is up 56% over the past 12 months. SDI is up 17% in the past 6 months when pre the volatility they had in March, April. IXI is up 43%, SDI is up 16%. Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, you need to have a look at what's going on with some of these companies in the sense of how they perform against each other. And although they may not do like for like exactly the same, you have a look at which companies have done well during the circumstances of where the markets actually, behaved. So that's where you are. So over 2 years of the 2 year time frame, which is plus or minus where since I've held it, probably 18 months I've held it, I think. Ixico's up 258% during that time.
Lovely.
And SDI's up 55%.
Well, there you go. While we're on the subject, you mentioned the market just then. Something that I just I need to stress. I put out a blog on my website last Saturday night, and on it I showed a descending triangle on the FTSE 100, and I said on it that, you know, you're in this situation where if that bottom line, which is 5771, if that fails as support, we could be looking at quite a substantial fall, and I think it could fall 500 points. Well, because we've got a triangle squeeze, so it's like, imagine a triangle that's pointing to the right with a flat bottom. And what's happening is the price, you can see it over sort of 3 months, the price is being squashed down by the top line. And the bottom line is holding firm. But today we closed very near that level. I think it was 5778. If it breaks below 5771, I think we're going to have a bit of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you've been calling that level for a while, Pete, and it's been trapped in that zone between, you know, 5800 and 6, just over 6,000. And today, Pete, you know, your level was actually triggered because the low on the FTSE 100 today was 5769.62.
Oh, was it? I didn't realise it went that low.
Yeah, and it closed at 5776.5. So it's right on it. So tomorrow is going to be a trigger day. Either it bounces or, you know, I've been calling the trapdoor at 6. Pete's been calling it at 5771. If 5771 actually goes tomorrow without a bounce in the afternoon, as Pete says, you know, the technical analysts of this world and the people that are looking at all the algos and the people that are pushing all those buttons, if they open that trapdoor, people, be prepared that Pete could be hopefully not 500 points further down, but we could see a further selling down before we get and see 6,000 again. And, you know, this is not just about what's going on in the US as to whether or not they can find a stimulus package to keep everyone happy. This is about cumulatively too much uncertainty going on globally regarding COVID, Brexit, you know, governments being trusted, politicians being trusted, people in work, people not in work. And the levels of employment, which no one wants to really talk about, are increasing.
Yeah, which they're going to go off the scale, aren't they? Yeah. You've got an interesting situation in the American markets. I'll just throw in quickly before I say that. The FTSE 250 last night and recently has been looking better than the FTSE 100. So maybe smaller stocks can sort of hold up a bit better, but I wouldn't hang your hat on that. Interesting situation in America, particularly on the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. You could have a double top where the share price has gone up to a peak and then it's dropped back, wiggled around a bit, and then it's gone up to a peak again. And those peaks are very even, very level. And it's often what I call Batman ears, because it's like the Batman silhouette sort of thing, where you get the two ears. If we have a Batman ears and it drops down, then that could be quite nasty in America. So people just need to look out for that pattern and be aware that it could happen.
Okie dokie. Have you got any other stocks there, Pete, you want to
Well, one weird one I'll throw in quickly. This is one I hold, WATR, Water Intelligence. It's a funny beast because although I sort of love it, I sort of hate it as well. And what I mean by that is I've done really well on it and I sold a load and banked a really nice profit. Then I sat on the position I had and it's just recently back up at all-time highs and doing really well. And they've come out with news saying they've got basically $20 million worth of firepower, which they're going to use for their strategy of launching new products and for buying back franchises in America and all that kind of stuff. But the thing that sort of bugs me a little bit about water is that I had a long discussion with Patrick D'Souza, who is the CEO or chairman, whatever he is, CEO. And I had a long chat with him, and in many ways he impressed me, but in many ways he was too impressive. and it's a really funny one where I'm very happy to hold it, but I don't think I want to commit more money to it. Do you know what I mean? You've just got that little instinct that there's something that sort of like holds me back on it, even though, you know, the recent results were good. And I think it's just done a placing the other day, you know, $5 million or something, you know, which in a way is a little bit annoying. It's like, why do you keep coming back for money? But then again, they need it for their strategy, which is sort of fair enough in a way. So it's a funny one. I mean, I'm very happy holding it. It's like, I think it's just broken out to new all-time highs, which is bullish behavior. So, you know, the chart's going the right way. And obviously water, because what they do is they have technology for finding holes. So if you've got like a leak in a pipe, they will figure out where your leak is and they'll go along and dig up the right bit and find your leak without destroying your whole driveway, you know? So they do that kind of stuff, plus some other things. And, the whole thing of water shortages and environmental and that is all good news. So the theme is strong, you know. Yeah. I like water. But yes, like I said, I just don't feel that committed to buy more yet, you know.
Okay, I mean, and equally, Pete, you're watching the market and seeing that trap door at 5771 and thinking, maybe I don't commit any money right now. That is a sensible thing to do, you know, because if the tendency is, folks, that when the market capitulates, it throws the bathwater out, everything out with the bathwater.
Yeah, okay? Out as a little baby.
So whether you've got the best stocks there, right, or a poor stock, they're just going to get all sold out, sold away the same. So we have to be mindful sometimes that whilst you see the winners, you know, the top 50 winners on AIM and the top 50 winners on the All Share Index each day doing well, when the markets capitulate, the result will be that all of those 50 stocks eventually will come back down with the rest of the other stocks that are doing well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
The bad ones will get thrown out with the good ones. So, you know, the best time to invest sometimes is when the markets are not doing much. Yeah, there's less volatility, and you can find the stocks you want to find and invest. It's not a great time to invest when the market's down 1%, 2%, 3%. Yeah, because then you're thinking, okay, but I've got the bottom. I mean, the classic at the minute, I see people buying Royal Dutch Shell and BP. You know, and we talked about earlier GSK at the start of this conversation. Lots of people have been buying GSK all year, right? Yeah. But it's fallen 10%.
The market's been dishing out big lessons in why it's not a great idea to fish the bottom.
You know, and if you, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with buying it being down 10, 15%. If you're buying it with a view to holding it for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and 5 years, because in 5 years' time, if the markets do what it should do, or if that company does what it should do, it won't matter that much that you missed out on buying it at the bottom. Yeah, but if, as Pete says, it capitulates, you could see Royal Dutch Shell down another 5-10%. You could see GSK down another 5-15%. And then that 30% loss is harder to then get back if the markets don't bounce back.
And it's spoken about it before. It's a psychology thing as well,
isn't
it?
It's a psychology thing, yeah. But I've spoken about it before, and I've said, you know, potentially we're in for a W. I really do not want to see 4,700 on the FTSE again. You know, but a W would mean that we go back down to that level before we see 6,500 or 7,000 again. I don't want to see sub 5,000. I don't want to even see 5,500. But the markets are going to do whatever they want to do. We have no control over that. The only thing we've got control over is how we behave when the markets do what they're going to do anyway.
And how we position. Another quick one. We need to finish fairly soon. We've been talking a little while. What I'll just throw in quickly is another new IPO that it might have listed or it's going to list very soon, and that's one called Roundhill Music. Now, on a recent podcast, I talked about Song, Hypnosis Song Fund, S-O-N-G. Well, Roundhill Music is very much the same sort of animal.
Okay. So there's now competition in that space, Pete. Are they planning to do the same sort of thing in the sense of buying catalogues or the same type of catalogues?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's very much been competition all along, you know. And Roundhill Music has existed for quite a long time from what I remember, from what I read about, you know, the pre-IPO blurb. I didn't read it that much because obviously I hold Song. It's not, you know, I'm not going to buy Roundhill Music as well. That would be pointless. Okay. But no, it's just another one that's kind of people might want to be aware of, you know.
Okie dokie. Well, On that note, folks, I'm just going to make a couple of comments regarding some of the feedback we've had. I just wanted to say, you know, Pete and I are blessed in the sense that we've got some great people that really enjoy what we do. And for you ladies and gents that are in the UK, in the US, in Sweden, in Thailand right now, in Spain, wherever you are that you're listening, thank you ever so much for continuing to support us and give us the feedback that you give us. I've had a phone call from a chap about, I won't, you know, share his name with you, but he actually just rang me out of the blue, and I know Pete's had some emails in the past, and all he wanted to say to me was, Pete, thank you and Wheelie ever so much for putting these podcasts together, because I really enjoy them and I look forward to listening to them the following week. And this guy, I know him, right, he's an IFA Pete, right? He goes out and he invests other people's money in funds and strategies and so on and so forth, and he sells this, that and the other, and he's enjoying our podcast. You know what I mean? So I was
fantastic.
Like, wow.
Thank you.
He's taken the time to come in, and I'll share the name with you later, Pete.
Yeah.
He's taken the time out to ring me personally to say thank you to you and Wheelie for doing this, because you don't need to be doing this and you're giving up so much time. And then there's another person, I don't know if it's male or female, at Shant Basu, who wrote a tweet to us on the 19th saying, excellent coverage of the week with a wide range of stocks. It is an hour well spent, lots of information to take on, and some small details are fascinating, including inland directors' pay, IC moving to two-page coverage on analysis. Thanks for the good work. So, you know,
bless
you
guys. Was he listening to our podcast? Are you sure?
So, yeah.
You sure that was our podcast?
Yes, that's our podcast, mate. So, you know, Brilliant. This is what I'm saying. You know, we put this out, we do this freely, we give up our time. And for me, that's the reward for me. Yeah, the reward for me is somebody just saying thank you. You know what I mean? Because they don't have to. And they've gone out, they've written it, they've picked up the phone and said that. And that to me is what, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to encourage people to share, to show kindness, to pay it forward. You know, because we're all learning. Every single day the market throws us a curveball and we're all learning. So if we can share stuff and educate people and help other people get better at what they're doing, we get better at it ourselves while we're trying to do this as well. You know, that's what it's about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So, ladies and gents, we're going to sign off here. Once again, Pete's going to tell you all about why we're sponsored by ShareScope, why you should be looking to potentially purchase or subscribe to that. But we would love you guys and ladies to continue supporting us. Subscribe on Google Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Overcast. Pete, over to you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you, everyone. As we said, I mean, if you're interested in using SharePad or ShareScope, there's loads of adverts all over my website. There's loads over Peter's that basically you just click on and you can sign up and you get a month free data, which is actually worth quite a bit of money. So that's quite handy. And it's a great system. I use ShearPad, as does Peter, and recommended. Anyway, that's it. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, folks, take care. Stay safe. God bless. This is Peter Higgins at Conkers3 and Pete at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter signing off. We'll see you, ladies and gents, in 2 weeks' time. Take care. God bless.
Thank you. Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with ShearPad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software. For private investors and traders, visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.